and welcome to this episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is episode 224, where I'm joined today by our very esteemed host, Katerina Santos. How are we doing, Kate?
Hi, Ken. How are you doing? It was a very nice session, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great session. It was another GDPR news session. So always really good to talk about the news, see what's going on. It was a very busy week, focused very much on the Information Commissioner this week, who's been a little bit of a hot bother, I'd probably say, in relation to his approach to the MOD breach in relation to Afghanistan, where he still, as I think, is largely wrong for not investigating as thoroughly as he should, standing to his decision, and basically choosing to say that he's happy with the decisions he's made. And in terms of the session as a whole, Kate, how did you find it? Were there any highlights for you?
I mean, I think it was a great session, actually. And I would say that this was my highlight. I think it's a case that highlights definitely a tension between the national security and transparency in the data protection world and data protection enforcement. And actually, we made a question during the episode about if the public bodies face the same scrutiny around regulations and how the data protection law is applicable as a private companies. And I feel like with the ICO and obviously public bodies and the ICO should actually make the example, and is interesting enough to see that they are the first ones saying, no, we're not investigating anything, we will not go the further, because obviously this involved a lot of individuals, a lot of data, very, very sensitive data, national security level data. So it's, very interesting to see.
No, absolutely. It's definitely really frustrating for some of the private companies out there who feel the inconsistencies in the ICO's investigations. We also had a little bit of a chat about AI as well, and in some relation to some other personal data breaches, because there's been a lot going on in the news this week. So definitely a session you don't want to miss. And I will not give any more away, and I'll let you jump right into the session. Okay, so how's your week been so far?
It was all right. I mean, we were talking earlier to understand what happened this week. I, to be honest, I don't remember. I have no idea. It was a very management kind of type of week. A lot of around recruitment, a lot around internal meetings and making sure that we are ready for all these events and for next year, and cracking on with some reports, because again, we are coming to the end of the year, so it's getting crazy. What about yours?
Yeah, quite similar with the management stuff. I mean, there's a lot of planning going around in DPP headquarters, and again, similar with recruitment for me. I mean, I've part recruitment now, because the old support team just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and I'm worried I might not be able to have time for them all soon, but you know, been very promising.
We have no space for all of us.
Yeah, exactly, no space. We'll have people sitting on the floor soon, so you know, really positive in terms of that. But I've been making a lot of training this week, which has been
was about this training
different this week? Just the internal training for some of the guys. So it's like a little training program I've been putting together. It's like 15 weeks. It's quite long. But it's touching about loads of different bits, and it's been a really different change of pace. Like delivering although I do a lot of obviously talking based stuff, obviously delivering and doing the training is very different, which I'll very, very occasionally do. Obviously, when we do our in-person events, when I've done training before and stuff, but it's been a fun change of pace. Actually, it's been I was going to say a relaxing week. It's definitely not been a relaxing week, but it's been a different kind of week. That's for sure.
That's nice. I think like a training is so important, isn't it? We are here, kind of saying to our customers all the time, that training is important. You need to train internally, etc. And we just, we need to as well to do it internally, isn't it? Like, we need to keep up to date. And I think it's great when we have like new people joining us, going around again from the principles and like just the theory, basically, and just making sure that they are aware of like the approaches and things going on. Because sometimes I feel that sometimes we We manage this literally every single day, 24/7. And sometimes we just probably just miss some bits, you know, like some, we're just so used to have this approach and just have this and doing that, that sometimes we may miss something. And I think having these regular training sessions is so good, so
You know what?
good.
The refreshers were good actually. Like even from my end, just refreshing my own knowledge. Like
Exactly.
I was looking through some Article 9 stuff, and I'm looking at some of the basics that I don't usually look at in terms of like scientific, historic research, archive, and stuff along those lines. And it's like, you know what? It's good to really go through this kind of stuff. You know, keep the wheels fresh. Sometimes when I spend so long doing the management stuff, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm not one thing's coming in and the other thing's
Just
coming
don't
out.
forget. I am
Yeah, though,
so
exactly.
scared of that sometimes, you know. I feel like, oh my God, what about all everything that I learned for the past years? I'll just forget.
All
No, I
gone.
don't. But a lot going on in the news, isn't it?
It's been a very, very busy week in the news, specifically for Mr. ICO himself. John Edwards has been an interesting week in the news for him, in relation to the MOD breach in Afghanistan as well. For I'm sure probably the majority of people that are on here are aware of the MOD breach and in some kind of case. But effectively what's been happening recently is there's been a lot of talk in the news about maybe the decision to not investigate that as thoroughly as they should have done, with it ended up having damages of around about, I think it was about like 80 million ish, wasn't it? With basically the commissioner coming out and saying that they believe what they've done is reasonable and, you know, defending their point. I wonder just what you think on that, Kate.
I mean, to be honest, I had a chance when you were doing this research, and you made the point obviously about this news, and I saw that the ICO's rationale, so that classified the restrictions limited their engagement. I mean, for me, it's concerning. I feel like I appreciate there are national security exemptions, like, you know, the Data Protection Act. I'm not sure about the article actually, but it's just the public accountability is very important. Like, it's just not about the exemptions, investigations, etc. For me, it's very weird. I was telling you, for me, it's very concerning. And definitely here, I think I liked this case. I liked a very clear tension between national security and transparency in their protection, like enforcement, and actually having the ICO making like, nope, we are not investigating further. Makes me think about it. Why? What are the reasons why? You know, it's just it's very concerning for me. I feel very uncomfortable, to be honest, with this.
Yeah, it's a bit odd to me, and it was from obviously from the jump with the lack of investigation and how quick they were to what felt like a sweeping under the rug. He makes a very interesting quote near the end. I think of the actual, well, it's in the article, but I'm sure I said it at some point. It was basically said because it was contained in a hidden cell. The person had a legitimate need to share a limited amount of information, and they accidentally shared more than they intended to. Okay,
All
you
right.
know, it left me scratch.
Literally something that we could have said, like, you know, perv, isn't it? Like, oh, I you know, should more than should. Well,
But
and
he seems like he's pinning down his reasoning to not investigate it because it was an accident, which is staggering to me because, you know, how many breaches happen a day, probably even an hour, because of accidents
Accident.
is one of
And
the
actually,
most.
it's like in the definition, isn't it?
Yeah, of course,
Do
the
not need to be
accidental
intentional.
unlawful disclosure of personal data, and this is like feels like such a blasé way of just saying, oh, you know, it was an accident. You know, we move on. This was a significantly serious breach, and it feels so half-assed, if you pardon my French, to just write it off as an accident. And yeah, just doesn't, you know, a lot of the decisions, or recently the decisions that the commissioner's been making, doesn't really sit very well with me. And
Does not
it
feel right. I feel
doesn't.
like even sorry, I feel even like this is so concerning because we're talking definitely about a public body. So my question is actually, do they, public bodies in this sense, face exactly the same regulatory like scrutiny as private companies, for example, or are we using these exemptions to like stretch and like, yeah, this is under the exemption? Like, what about accountability? Like, what about, is national security exemptions that are making the point, not just here, but about other cases around data breaches, becoming just like a shield against potentially accountability? It just makes me very uncomfortable, you know, and I feel like because you're talking about public bodies, should be the ones making the example in regarding to the other companies. And
it sets a really frustrating precedent that you know, with it feels like with some instances the ICO is willing to look the other way, which I would imagine for other companies is very frustrating. Companies that have been fined by the ICO and have been investigated by the ICO, you know, when you look over to the consent and pay mechanisms, which obviously are still very frequently in the news and still very frequently discussed, just feels like a clear attempt to me of just deciding to make a very obvious decision that just strictly to the letter of the law is not true. You know, that by no, it's so backwards to me that you can scrutinize someone for having a different color on their cookie banner. That leads someone to make a decision that might not be considered freely given, to then say, you know, you can do that, you need to make sure the colors are neutral, but if you want to charge them a fee, that sounds pretty okay to me.
Consent is really given, isn't it? Because people have a choice, because they can pay. How is that?
What if I can't pay? You know, what if I don't have the funds to pay?
Exactly. It should not be like a distinction about like actually the services. Again, like education wise, newspapers, like should not be like line drawing. I don't know. It just feels very odd. And apparently, on that note, actually the ICO updated the guidance on the consent to pay. I'm curious to understand where, considering the Matters case recently on that note. So I'm actually very curious to understand where was the update on that.
Yeah, I probably need to go back through the guidance and have a read of it. Obviously, I was mentioning the training, and we were doing consent training not that long ago with the team on support, and I went on a very, very long rant about the consent of our pay mechanism stuff. So I'm probably going to give it another read. Maybe it's the frustration that's blinding me, but it just feels so silly to me, you know, when it's so clearly wrong. And I think the ICO has always had this image of being a little bit of a glass hammer, and I don't think they are helping themselves in the way in which that they act.
Yeah, I think Shani is absolutely right. I think it's a weak regulatory message and undermines the integrity of the ICO. It's absolutely right. Spot on. Yeah. Agreed. What about Verstappen?
Yeah.
It was in the news, wasn't it?
Yeah, for
once again.
all the gearheads and the F1 fans. Not me personally. I can't wrap my head around it.
I'm a Hamilton fan.
To be honest with you. But for those that don't know Max Verstappen, as I'm probably sure most people do nowadays, he is a F1 driver, very famous one. Don't ask me who he drives for, couldn't tell you.
Red Bull.
Ferrari, McLaren, I don't know, those are the ones I know.
Verstappen is Red Bull.
He's recently been affected with a cyber attack recently, or he's had his personal data accessed in one. So the FIA recently revealed that a security breach occurred in the summer that exposed the personal data of hundreds of their drivers within F1, maybe more in like the sort of lower divisions of like F2 and stuff like that, but predominantly drivers, any kind of driver, including the Formula One champion, current champion, Max Verstappen. Apparently some hackers had gained access to the categorization portal for the drivers, which is due to like a mass assignment bug. We have 7,000 drivers, apparently, Charlotte says, which is significant for sure. And it led me into an interesting thought that we were having not that long ago, Kate, about like vulnerability. And to me, I see people within the public eye, like Max Verstappen, as someone that could be considered vulnerable in different timeframes. Obviously, I think vulnerability with data subjects is relatively fluid in terms of when someone is vulnerable and when someone isn't. It's not always as clear cut as that. You know, there are circumstances that can change. But I think in cases like this, you know, people in the public eye, I would consider to be more vulnerable. So I think the effects of this are relatively serious. I know the FIA said that immediate steps were taken to secure it, and that it's been reported. So it has gone to the ICO. I don't think, obviously, any word will have been heard from the ICO as far as I'm aware. But I do think this is quite significant. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, I think it's a very interesting thought, to be honest. And I know that the ICO, the UK data protection law does not obviously mentions the vulnerability as in the definitions, but actually do not define what actually vulnerable individual might mean, which obviously give us some food for thoughts if we can or not include these type of situations in here. Obviously, I understand that because they are public, like celebrities, may say, and public profiles, they are everywhere, and people already have access to this type of information. However, I feel that because of that, they are constant targets. So they can be like under like scams and impersonation, harassment, discrimination,
blackmail as well, you know.
Blackmailing, etc. So, I mean, it's true that they potentially do not kind of go into the vulnerability definition that I think the UK data protection law is kind of designed to protect, like potentially children and people with medical conditions, etc. But definitely 100%, I would say that in a broader definition and a broader interpretation of the concept, they would, yeah, I think they could be considered vulnerable because of the high value, high impact targets, the discrimination that will come from that, I would say so. I think it's a very interesting thought, actually.
Yeah, it's just it's something that only really like recently crossed my mind with this, and then a webinar that I'd seen not long ago where it was discussing vulnerability, which I think it's really interesting to consider it as something that sort of constantly shifts. You know, at a given time, anyone can be considered vulnerable, and I think because when you're in the public eye, there is that element of attention to you, and of course,
absolutely,
when it comes to that, there are people that can and will exploit that if necessary. You know, you've got to be a little bit more careful when it comes to the security of these higher profile individuals, especially considering it was quite it's quite an obvious bug, apparently, the bug that was on the system, which let them gain, I think it was like admin access as well, which is like pretty significant. But obviously, maybe we watch this space, we can hear what the ICO says in the future if they do end up saying anything about it.
Absolutely. I feel actually like I was thinking a little bit deep on that. I think we're always thinking about being like vulnerable data subjects, being people with less power, children, patients, employees, with certain conditions, etc. But definitely in a data breach context, surely we can include like and go broader in this definition, because I mean, people are more, the public eye, vulnerable. So potentially, obviously, the dangers and the risks involved with that will be absolutely much bigger. So, yeah, good one. Well done on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Well done on that. Sometimes happens.
I'm going to say sometimes something hits me. Maybe I just heard someone cleverer than me say it as well. But there is something else interesting that we was talking about probably a little bit early before the podcast in relation to OpenAI and ChatGPT that I know you have some very particular thoughts on, don't you, about the plans to put Erotica, a service that they will offer, onto AI. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So OpenAI wants to and plans to allow erotic content on ChatGPT. Obviously, it's very concerning, I would say, for obvious reasons. But obviously, I think my first thought was welcome scrutinization from the Online Safety Act, because as soon as this erotic content will be available and made available, this means that the ChatGPT will be considered as a pornographic content provider, which obviously will, and in principle under the scope of the Online Safety Act, triggering obligations for age verification, transparency, proactive risk assessments. And I'm actually very, very, very keen to understand how will actually look like, because I've seen just the news around this. It's about the plan, nothing more than that until this very moment.
You say it's around like building an avatar as well, don't you? Sort of molding towards
fetishes
or whatever. Is that similar to the case that occurred with that young man and the AI girlfriend, where obviously he really obviously sadly took his life?
I mean, from what I read and from what I understood was we'll be basically able to tell ChatGPT what you like to see on the other person, and they will create an avatar exactly how you would like to have, like, a boyfriend or at least a sexual partner, and they will create this avatar for you, and then as soon as you, if you are able and the avatar is created, you'll be able to speak with them in obviously in a pornographic way, which I think will create so many concerns, because we are talking about potentially sex orientation in the year, potentially no, sex orientation, fetish, preferences, behaviors. I'm thinking about, I think cookies will be involved in here, because the avatars will be like some thoughts about avatars being created based on your preferences and your cookies that were obviously collected from other websites. So I think it's very interesting, and I'm more about the age verification. How will this look like? You know, how will this look like?
Do they have that functionality? Obviously, they need that functionality now, don't they? If they want to roll it out, so obviously it's going to be something that needs to take an element of care for them. Obviously, from a moral standpoint, I don't really understand it anyway. But if they want to roll that out, then they need to make sure that they are abiding by the Online Safety Act. I mean, it's interesting because ChatGPT is so broadly used. It's also used from a business perspective. So you'd surely hope that there's an option to at least not use that functionality. Well, hopefully, because obviously, if not, a lot of people's AI policies will likely need to change if you're going to be using OpenAI as a business. I know most people tend to opt towards Copilot, don't they? Because it's usually integrated.
Yeah, the Microsoft,
But yeah, no, very, very, very strange.
It
always unsettles me, this like really heavy movement into AI content, especially in those kind of means. It just doesn't, I think from a moral standpoint, it just doesn't sit very well with me, but it just makes me very, uncomfortable, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
I agree. I feel like two thoughts actually. On a data protection thought is obviously the fact, and this is around anything around age verification. Actually, I feel that obviously for safety reasons they need to have the age verification. But on the other side, we will have a lot of data being processed and collected because of the age verification being required. Often will be considered sensitive, even potentially biometric. So we'll create like privacy and security concerns, obviously. But on the other side, I feel we are living in the world right now where people are getting married and engaged and getting married with robots, with AI tools, with now we have a ChatGPT that will create these avatars.
So I think
it's a very real weird world that we're living in nowadays.
It
feels very dystopian and very concerning. And I cannot even imagine how parents are feeling in this very moment, because obviously this is uncomfortable for us. And bear in mind that we are data protection practitioners. We should be the ones supposedly to obviously like these new arrangements and liking these new tools and things coming through. But actually, because we are so aware that we are actually the ones saying, no, this should not happen.
Well, my broader question also comes in, you know, are we violating other people's rights for this? I don't know how this tool would work, but would I be able to put through an image of a celebrity or someone that you know, even maybe like someone like a porn star? Is still, obviously they do that kind of job to get paid for it, and there would be something that they wouldn't be paid for, or even deeper than that, could be people that you actually know on a personal level, if you have images of them and stuff like that. And that is a deep and genuine concern. Obviously, there was a big A big thing around deepfakes, like not that long ago, it was a while ago, but that's back when the technology was not like very well equipped for these kind of things. So they were very obviously doctored and fake. And I think now it's becoming harder and harder to tell. I've seen that's a weird tangent, but I've seen a video of like a an AI video of a Scouse guy who was who looked like Jesus, who was like out on a night out, and it looked very. I would have thought it was real, honestly. Genuinely, it had me convinced for a little bit, but it's just like these are the times that we live in now, and I know that makes me sound really old, which I promise I'm really not. But I think it's very. They would have to be so sure that that would be something that they can roll out securely, because to me that feels like, if possible, if you could do it like that, it feels like an invasion of the majority of people's rights, I think.
I agree. And to be honest, to add to what you're saying, I feel that even can create more problems because if you are able to use, for example, an image of someone that you don't know, you probably will think, well, if you are talking about people with like some vulnerabilities, etc., you will probably think in your mind that you have this relationship with that person, which there's no idea that you exist, for example, in this world. And this can create more things because, for example, well, I'm completely now I'm just putting like a novella, a Mexican one in my head now. But thinking about, for example, I don't know, a person that thinks that you have this relationship and then you see in the newspaper, well, hold on, she got married with this other lad. You probably will put that person even in danger if you have some like vulnerabilities in some conditions, for example, or have tendency for, I don't know. I'm just thinking now I'll completely my head. It makes no sense. But to me, I promise you, it makes my sense in my head. But I'm just thinking this can put people in danger, actually, aside from all, obviously, they are right. It's very concerning. It's very concerning. It's very concerning. It's very unsafe. I feel very uncomfortable with this. Very uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was thought about it similarly with like art and stuff as well. Like it can follow like art to the T, to the point where like again, there's a really big thing with like artists in general, or even like people that work in creative fields are being very 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 upset around the use of like AI. I think Warner Brothers and DC Studios at the moment were having quite a big sort of back and forth around the use of AI for their writing of or their drawing of comic books, should I say, which obviously leads people out of jobs for, you know, they're meant to be commissioned for creativity, but they're using AI to effectively replicate their own work, which is again problematic. AI is, but I don't know if it comes from a position of maybe less knowledge than hopefully I would like to have on AI, but it's such a intimidating thing, isn't it, when you don't feel like you know enough about it.
I feel as it is a world that needs to be explored, but the problem with the exploration of that world is, I don't want to be negative, but I saw this documentary called Social Media Dilemma, and we obviously it was about, well, social media and algorithms, etc. But we explore a little bit on the terms of not even AI and how the regulators won't try to regulate. But then obviously tomorrow is a new day, you know, and potentially the law is not applicable anymore because something else changed. And that's why the regulations are sometimes so broad and so wide, because they are trying to regulate something, but in a very broad way to make sure that at least for tomorrow or next year will still be applicable. And I feel that AI is a world that it just scares me, you know, because I with the deep face you were mentioning and the fact that now everything is just possible. We have proven enough that potentially there were some concerns around the elections and Donald Trump, not these ones, the other ones, the first ones. The fact that this can create wars, you know, this can create wars. If I do a deep fake from someone saying, well, this is here, America, and we are making like this war against X, for example, or like, I don't know, you can create a war without even being true, and you have no idea because it is what it is. It's the world that we
Well,
live now, you know.
there's big implications of it, isn't it? Do you watch South Park? Are you aware of South Park?
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen the most like recent episode not that long ago in the new season, where like the last 5 minutes of the episode is a very long deep fake of Donald Trump stranded on an island, which he's like completely naked, which are desperately trying to sue.
Did they not
Like
just
they're trying to sue them
take
for.
it off that one and with Charlie Kirk as well?
I think they took the Charlie Kirk one down. I know
I thought
that
the Donald Trump was on as well.
There is a lawsuit obviously pending with the Donald Trump stuff. But obviously there is broader implications for it. But again, very, very accurate. Like you maybe wouldn't have been able to tell in some elements of it. Like, and you know, it's a bit, I admit it's a bit of a tangent we're going down, but still it's, I think until it is regulated more clearly, these conversations are going to continue to happen, and it's going to...
Absolutely, but I mean, but to be honest, how can you regulate, you know? I think, don't get me wrong, I definitely agree with the regulation and needs to be stricter, etc., but I think the problem are in the companies. You need to tell them to stop, and you need to try to make sure that the companies have these requirements and there are audits to make sure that they follow these rules. And I mean, and if there's something else is found to not to follow the rules or to the requirements, you need to make them as an example and not trying to kind of, you know, just going around the regulation. I feel like, I don't know, it's very unsettled, to be honest.
Yeah, well,
I have a lot of opinions on this.
the godfather of AI supposedly had a very, like, harrowing, like, he accepted an award and had a very harrowing speech from it, which... kind of opened my eyes to it, at least, where he's saying like we kind of need to regulate this, it's got to be out of control. But I am very mindful of the time and the fact that me and Kay are waffling slightly.
Can I just make a point before we go?
Of course.
That is actually it was a costume of ours that made the question around the UK EU. Well, in this case, EU UK. So because of the due on the in June 20 this year, the extension between the EU UK was confirmed. So there is an extension of the deadline about the framework and the adequacy about the UK and the EU. And this was extended until the 27th December this year. I'm not sure about you, but at least myself, I did not heard anything about a confirmation of there is still adequacy between the UK and EU after this deadline. So a thing that you just should be aware of, because I do remember at the time, because of the DUA, the European Commission was a little concerned about the, the release of the burdens of the organizations that the DUA introduces in the UK data protection law. So I'm aware that they are reviewing that and making sure, obviously, they are still happy and the UK is still considered adequate on a data protection level. But I think it's important to just bear this in mind because, obviously, December is almost tomorrow. And if there is no renewal, this will have serious tasks to do in terms of organization wise.
We would be very busy for sure. Over a DPP. I presume they're just biding their time to make sure that the ICO doesn't come out with anything that is like really contrary to what's already there.
Do you think they are still waiting for some guidance from that will come from the consultation process that the ICO is not still doing?
Well, maybe. I don't think it, like, the DUA doesn't seem to change anything so significantly, I think, that would threaten adequacy.
Yeah.
I could see how they were concerned about that at first.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a case of maybe them biding their time to see if there's anything, like, truly significant that's going to change it. But, you know, I wouldn't be worried just yet. I don't think there's anything to worry about, but obviously it's definitely something to be aware about because obviously as Kate says, if it does change, the implications on us as a country now that a lot of the processing we're going to be doing will be considered a restricted transfer without an adequacy decision. There's going to be a lot of international transfer work that needs to be done because the majority of data centers really aren't really here in the UK. You know, they're in the EU, they're in the US. Because even over in Ireland, it's predominantly EU, isn't it? So obviously we've seen that from the AWS personal data breach as well, which I was mindful to talk about. Not the personal data breach, sorry. The servers going, oh, maybe it was. They've not really been very clear on it, have they? But their servers has gone down, which has widely impacted banks everywhere. In the
Yeah. I mean,
UK.
and to be honest, even like data centers is not that. Like, we do like these due diligence for third parties. Well, we are doing, for example, the ROPA or reviewing documentation, etc. And if they are not based in the UK, normally it's like around Ireland, Dublin, a lot of Germany wise, etc. And I feel like the impact, I feel positive. I agree with you. I feel like there is nothing to worry about. I feel positive in a sense of, for example, within the cookies wise from the doer, and there is the release of burden of collecting consent for a certain type of cookies. I understand now that the European Commission is reviewing the privacy as well regulation, so to trying to make kind of like make the same thing that the doer intends to do here. So I feel positive in that sense. But can you imagine the impact? It's massive. It's
Yeah, it
massive. It's
would be.
massive.
It, I think it's
Yeah.
too crazy to happen, to
Yeah,
be
I
honest.
agree. It would be. Yeah, would be.
Considering the US can have adequacy, I think we'd be okay, to be honest with
Yeah.
you. I think even from a political standpoint, like they're probably unlikely to do it just from that perspective. So,
Yeah.
I'm hoping all is well, but obviously, please keep your eye on updates from the regulators.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
hopefully, it will mean nothing.
Yeah. And on that note, probably we just need to leave.
Probably so. Yeah, probably a good time that we wrap up. So thank you guys for coming, and we hope to see you in the next one, which is all about cookies.
Thank you very much, all. Have a nice weekend. Bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.